you been looking for a podcast about agriculture? One that can increase your farm's profitability, all without putting you to sleep? Welcome to Field Trials Unleashed. We're experts in testing different farming practices and products. We test it and then report back the real skinny. This is Field Trials Unleashed. And here are your hosts, Craig Blohemker and Eric Beckett.
Welcome back to another episode of Field Trials Unleashed. I'm Craig.
And I'm Eric.
Eric, episode 10, let's talk about national data may not being applicable to regional data.
Yep.
If you have not followed us or subscribed, please subscribe to our channel on whatever podcast platform. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. And then be sure to check out our Twitter page and follow us there as well, because we do reference articles that we mention on the show, and we'd love to have you follow us on there. So, Eric, recently I had a grower come in, and there was a, I guess, very broad national recommendation to use Sharpen as a residual for water hemp. Now, that may be, from where the recommendation was, that may have been a great recommendation because it was more arid.
Yep.
And, you know, that is a water-soluble compound. So, you know, maybe it would be a good residual there. But in central Illinois, where we're farming, we have a lot of rainfall.
Yeah, we do. And more so than most parts of the country, even under center pivot irrigation, which most of our western corn belt is, a lot of it's under center pivot irrigation.
It might be why we have a lot of black plastic in the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we have all that black plastic.
So, Point being, be cognizant of where your information is coming from and understand why that recommendation was made, where it was made, and see if it is actually applicable to our geography. And so, Eric, you also have an example this past year, I believe, with another one of our sales staff.
Yep. So one of our sales staff had approached me about a grower and farming operation that also raises a fair amount of cattle and has a feedlot and everything. And so they accumulate quite a bit of manure throughout the year. And like, you know, it's a habit, it's a nasty habit to get into, but it happens that I get it, that manure, you know, there's a lot to deal with. And so, you know, typically a lot of times it doesn't get hauled very far from the source. So, you know, those fields that are closest to the source, they typically get the brunt of the manure. And so this grower had a number of fields that actually we had already been coaching them that, you know, we need to get the manure in different fields and further away, that phosphorus and potassium levels were just through the roof. And so actually this grower, you know, from what I've seen, isn't probably going to need to apply any P and K for quite some time. I mean, we're just crazy stupid levels. Real problem that had been kind of that the grower was concerned about, or that, you know, that had brought to the grower, was that, you know, there might be a risk for sodic soils. And so, you know, sodic soils is something that you typically think about in a desert, or, you know, the Dead Sea, or, you know, the Great Salt Basin out in Utah. That is sodic, that is salt. And that's just something that we don't have a problem around here, because we receive enough annual rainfall, and we're not under center pivot irrigation where, you know, basically those salts are getting recycled. They leach down through, they get brought back up, leach back down. So it's just kind of a nasty, vicious cycle, you know, under certain irrigation situations it can be. So, you know, that was a kind of a coaching moment that we had to kind of talk through, that, you know, we receive enough annual rainfall throughout the year to naturally leach those salts out through the soil. Now, I realize that most commercial fertilizers out there, especially potassium source fertilizers, are, you know, very salty by nature. And so, but really, I mean, that isn't even a concern, just because annual rainfall. And, you know, even though, you know, it can get hot here in the summertime, we have evaporation, but we're still, the key is rainfall. And so, you know, we had to talk it through to grower that, you know, this is just really not a concern, that if you, you know, maybe would have looked at where the source of the information was coming from, this message was being blasted across the entire United States. But where the core of this group or where the message was coming from was, you know, say out in Nebraska. It was coming from Nebraska is where it was coming from. And so while, you know, Nebraska, they raise some fantastic corn yields, but they have to go about it a little bit differently than we do here in Illinois or in even East Central Illinois for that matter. And so it's really important to take in consideration where the information's coming from, how it's being delivered, and does it apply to me? And this touches right in with research data that, you know, we've already talked about, that you need to consider the source, where it was done, you know, how the research was done, was there replications, how many sites was it done on, how many years has it, you know, been looked at, and then looked at the statistics and see, like, for instance, like what the LSD number is. And that, you know, depending on the value of the LSD number, that's going to tell you how repeatable that research data is. So if the number gets too far out of whack, you know, that's just going to be a noisy data set. And what I mean by noise is there's a lot of clutter and a lot of fluff that it may just be a one-off and it's not going to be repeatable. And so just like, you know, with farming recommendations or a recommendation to use a particular product, we need to consider the source of how that recommendation was derived. And then if it was research data saying that, you know, this product will bring you X amount of bushels, but how repeatable is that? Is the, you know, what I'm getting at, what growers need to really think about. And if whoever is the source of that information and bringing that to you, and, you know, they're just making broad claims and it seems to be the old adage, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is too good. And so we really need to press people and not get caught up in that, oh, wow, this is going to bring us so many bushels per acre that, you know, we can't get caught up in a moment, and we need to really focus on, you know, how reputable is this data and how reputable is that person that's bringing the data to you? Because, unfortunately, there are still a lot of snake oil salesmen out there in the marketplace.
Well, and I don't want to use that term too loosely, but, yeah, there are a lot of products out there. And I think if agriculture does one thing well in some ways – is the marketing. And on the same side, you know, the other flip side of the coin, there's areas that we could probably be a little better at marketing ourselves. We do a great job at marketing stuff, and we do a great job of marketing products and brand names, and then farmers kind of get caught up in that.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing that, you know, I'm personally guilty of it too from time, but, you know, one thing that marketing really likes to do is, like, if you see a bar graph, and you'll see a range of numbers of, you know, and so a lot of times what marketing will do is they'll scale down that bar graph to where you only see, you know, instead of showing 0 to 100, they may only show you 60 to 80 on the bar graph. And then so then that skews those bars to make it look like the swings are a lot wider in, you know, maybe say the bushels per acre that treatment A had over treatment B. And so those are things to also look at, is look at the scale of the bar graph. And if it's not showing you that full range, it's most likely been manipulated by marketing.
Yeah. Well, and again, those market groups are trying to sell stuff. But I think, you know, the farmers have I don't want to say a conundrum, but they're always getting bombarded with all these products. And it's hard to cipher through the fluff. And I think, you know, that's what I pride myself on, and I know you do as well.
Yeah, I do, definitely.
On sifting through all this stuff and trying to get to the root of the problem. And so, you know, I'm asking growers when they, you know, hey, this product looks really good. What do you think, Craig? Well, let's go back and look at your actual program on the farm and make sure that we're not doubling up on something, because a lot of these products are the same product in a jug with a different brand or a different label on it, or the changes are so minute that, you know, it may not benefit you the 5 or 10 bushel that the product's claiming to bring to the farm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and one thing that I'm focusing or seeing a lot, I've really seen it this a lot this year, is that, you know, some of our competitors or, you know, generic brands that we work with, now, while it may be the same active ingredients as, you know, a branded product that we're commonly using, the formulation of that product may be just a little bit different, and you know, maybe it doesn't have a safener or something built into it. And so there is a real reason why, you know, safeners are built into some herbicides, that it brings a level of crop safety. And so just because it says, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, metolachlor. There's an S version and then just a straight metolachlor. And a lot of generics, to get the price point down, they'll just use straight metolachlor. And so I really challenge, you know, when we're thinking about pre-programs, to really consider the SMOC version of the metolachlor.
That's a great example. And I was, if you hadn't gone there, I was going to, because I actually just was approached by a grower about the same situation and hesitant to use group 15 chemistries ahead on the corn because they had, and what's eerily very similar conditions right now where we're planting and laying down these residuals, and the temperatures, what was this morning, was like 36.
Yeah,
it was cold.
It was.
And we got rain on the horizon, and then you put these chemicals, and then, so their experience in the past, they had laid down a unsafened metolachlor and had leafing out into the ground and all kinds of issues from that. And so they were hesitant to use it. Well, if they had used the safened version, would have minimized that risk and had a much better program for that.
Yes, and not to mention that the SMOC has a much more, delivers, just in short terms, delivers a much more higher lethal dose of metolachlor that's available to weeds to take up. And so it's just an overall better form of that product. And if you got to pay a few more bucks for it, by all means, use it. I mean, the best weed scenario is if one never comes up. And so why would you want to take that chance?
Yep. And there's other examples of that. We won't go into that today. But I did want to touch on some updates here regionally. And we've got some cutworm traps up. Now, I would say we're not at threshold, but I did check the trap a few days ago and had found 7 moths, and I was hoping to see maybe yesterday if there was a few more. There was not, but I'll check it again tonight. So just know, I mean, again, not threshold, but there are some pressures coming in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the trap that I set out, I haven't really seen much numbers either to speak of, but there again, you know, the moths are there. And so it is something to be, you know, thinking about, that if you do have a BT hybrid that doesn't have a specific BT trait for cutworm activity, it might be worth going and scouting the fields, because I'm starting to see a lot of V1, V2 corn out there. And so we're getting into prime cutting activity if we're going to have it. I mean, it's going to be happening soon. Now, while we're still seeing the moths, but that means, you know, that the larvae is not far behind.
Yeah. Now, we were driving along today. What else did you find?
I found my very first bean leaf beetle of the year. Now, it seems like it's a little bit on the early side, but I'm sure it's probably getting about that time of year that if you maybe skimped out on your seed treatments and didn't use a good insecticide with your seed treatment, you could possibly start, you know, seeing some feeding. And, you know, if we're seeing feeding on cotyledons, and even as we start getting into trifoliate stages, it's going to be something you want to keep an eye on. And if it gets bad enough, of course, we're going to want to use IPM measures and not just go have revenge sprays. But it may warrant, you know, having a pass dedicated for controlling bean leaf beetles. But, you know, that would be worst case scenario.
Yeah. Again, scouting. So, keeping with the theme of just kind of what's going on in central Illinois here, I was out scouting wheat fields, and I've got some fields starting to head out. So I would recommend anybody who has wheat anywhere, but in particular here in our geography, that's what I'm talking about. Be scouting your fields, be understanding where the growth stage is, and make sure you've got your fungicide in-house and in possession and make that game plan. Now,
there are some different premix combinations that require you to kind of go more on maybe say the earlier side. And then there's also some good premixes that, you know, you can wait longer in the season and go all the way up till maybe 95% head emergence and even starting to get close to pollen shed. So it's going to be really important to understand and know what chemical program you're running, and then make sure that that's being applied at the correct growth stage, because, you know, the last thing we want to do is throw a product out there and then not even, you know, be effective at the proper growth stage. And then the other thing is, if you're a little bit unsure about what the growth stage is, I know personally I don't work with wheat every day, so I have to occasionally, I just haven't committed all the feek stages to memory.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even though I am an agronomist, I still have to kind of refer to things, you know, little cheat sheets like that from time to time. So if you are a grower and, you know, if you are a little bit unsure what the growth stage is, by all means, let's make sure and verify that we know what growth stage, so that way we can maximize our product, and then in turn, you know, ultimately maximize yield by, you know, what we're trying to do with that fungicide anyways.
Yeah, well, and then also, be cognizant of disease, because another thing, disease sets on early.
Yep.
You know, maybe you need to change your practices, your timing, or your products in that manner. But let's go ahead and talk about products, because I'm not pitting one against the other here.
No, because I think probably the two products we're probably thinking about, they're both very excellent products and you know, have a lot of utility in the marketplace.
Yeah. So I'm going to be running Miravasase, I think, primarily, and simply because it's the newest one on the market, and also the efficacy looks great, and it offers me a big timing window. So you were talking about, you know, whether they're fully headed out or 95% headed out, you don't have to worry about that as much with this product. You can go a little early on the early side.
Yeah. So the other product that I was kind of thinking also as well was Presario. And so actually with the Presario label, they would actually rather you go a little bit later and get close to full head emergence before actually making that application. So while, you know, that could actually, you know, doing a product like that could give us a little bit more flexibility, or, you know, because if you look at the forecast for this weekend, you know, we got a big rain. So that doesn't necessarily mean we need to rush out between now and when it starts raining tomorrow. Hopefully I do still want rain, but maybe not quite as much as what they're predicting. But anyways, I'm just saying, depending on what side of the fence you're on, it can give you flexibility on what product, but you just really need to make sure that whatever product you're going to be using, it's going to fit your needs. That, you know, there again, you need to be scouting. You need to understand what diseases might be present in your field, and not any just fungicide package is going to take care of, you know, those diseases that you may have. So really be, you know, cognizant of that as well.
And another thing, I am not a weed expert either. I've had wheat ever since I've been here. I had to do treats. So I've came up with a good fertility program and then, you know, been working on the fungicide piece. But another thing you can consider would be throwing in like a nice foliar micronutrient package in with that fungicide and help kind of finish that grain out.
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually working with one grower in our northern part of our territory where we actually took a 150-acre field. And so this is an on-farm discovery opportunity right here. But so one-third of these acres are going to have a fungicide insecticide with a nutritional. A third is just going to have a fungicide insecticide, and then the last third is going to be a completely untreated check. So
perfect.
So that's going to give us some great data right there.
And on wheat, and which again is not big in this area, but
yeah,
shoot, we do.
I mean, maybe we'll get 150 bushel wheat.
Hey, if you can pull that off, I got a lot of growers that might sign up.
Yeah.
So Eric, I think the key takeaway is today, just be cognizant of where your data is coming from. Be aware that there is a lot of marketing, especially in every industry, but it seems like in ag, when it comes to trying to push product and sell stuff, there's a lot of marketing that goes into that to make it more appealing. So be aware of what the marketing is actually telling you. And then the best thing I can tell my growers is just be cognizant of what the problem is that you're trying to treat, because every product out there is intended to sell to you to treat a problem. And so if you're already addressing that problem, then you don't need to double up and buy another product that's going to do the same thing. ROI goes down significantly when you do that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and just because, you know, you may not be using the exact product or the exact, you know, formulation, there's enough like products and enough like things that are going to still get the job done just as good. And they might most definitely be at a, you know, a better price point. And so, you know, there's some instances that I'm specifically thinking of is, you know, maybe a dry formulation of a herbicide, you know, versus a liquid formulation. Sometimes that liquid formulation's cheaper, but then sometimes, you know, the other one's cheaper. But so those are just things, you know, to kind of be aware of, that always look at the label and just always remember that there is no substitution for good agronomy.
You've been listening to Field Trials Unleashed. Agronomic trials, products, practices, what makes sense for you and your farm's profitability. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Craig and Eric on Twitter at Trials Unleashed. From there, you can get agronomic updates and submit questions for future shows. See you next time. Yeah.